after chaos comes insight. You know, if something is chaotic, it can only be better later, you know. So if you look at chaos in a positive way, it's good. It's before, after chaos, knowledge. But this is, it's very, very strange. I only found one Russian Buddhist website where they explain Sarvastivada, and it's more or less correct. But actually, when they do not give bibliography, but when I looked at this article, I recognized my own words, which I wrote in 2008. So I wrote an article in 2008. Actually, this is the first long explanation about Sarvastivada and the new ideas in 2008 in Tokyo. It is.
Is it existing internet?
Maybe it's in the library, I don't know. The title is Kumarajiva. Kumarajiva's explanatory discourse about Abhidharmic literature. This is the title. The title of the article, quite long article. Explanatory discourse means upadesha. Means upadesha. Explanatory discourse is an English translation of upadesha. About the title of that article in 2008. So I looked at the Chinese text called Ta Chi Tu Lun, which means Mahaprajna Paramitopadesha. The Mahaprajna Paramitopadesha, and this is quite long. And I said, this is probably the text written down by Chinese when they listened to Kumarajiva teaching in Chang'an. This Mahaprajna Paramitopadesha is not a translation of an Indian text that we know. It is not written by Nagarjuna. Kumarajiva has been teaching in Chinese capital. Chinese monks wrote down. Kumarajiva checked the text. And then, in order to say who wrote this, Kumarajiva did not say, I did. You don't do that. Kumarajiva said, my master Nagarjuna did. These are the ideas of Nagarjuna. So name of Nagarjuna is there. But Kumarajiva, it's his own work, we now know. This, and it's an explanatory discourse. I said, Mahasanghikas usually have upadesha. The Stavidas have shastra. It's a different system. That's why I do not say Abhidharma, because so Kumarajiva's upadesha, the explanatory discourse means upadesha, upadesh, about Abhidharmic, Abhidharma sort of, Abhidharma-like literature, because upadesha does not have Abhidharma. Upadesha has petaka. You have petaka upadesha. So, that's why I use this word. There is only one exception of Mahasanghikas who may have Abhidharma. Only one. It's the Bahushrutiyas. But even that is, we don't know enough to say they have Abhidharma or not. But it's possible that they have. You know the Bahushrutiyas. Bahushrutiyas. Bahushrutiya. Bahushruta is a very sthaviriya word. Bahushruta, you have it in Pali, well, Sanskrit anyway. So it's a learned person, about a monk who is Bahushruta. He's learned, a learned person. Alpashruta means
he knows only very little. And actually, the Buddha likes people who know very little too, you know. Because to get the Bodhi, he said it is better to practice one gatha and really do it, instead of knowing the whole literature and not practicing. You know, this is very famous, this idea. Anyway, this the Bahushrutiya, the learned, they are one group in Patna. We saw the overview about the Nikayas. And I said, Ekavyava Harikas, the ones who have one sound, they teach everything in one sound, Eka. And this one sound is higher, supramundane, is higher above this world. And you, this one sound can give you the whole teaching. And they changed name to Lokottaravada, who do not limit the Buddha to one world, to this world, but see him everywhere. This is one group, and they're mostly in the north. And the second one is the Kukutikas. In the Kukutarama, in Pataliputra, the Kukutarama is also known as the Ashokarama. And because I'm using the Sanskrit, originally it was Prakrit. And because the Sanskrit may be more than one possibility for this Prakrit word. You know. So instead of Kukutikas, they also say Gokulikas. And then I have a very funny story which has to do with a cow. Not with a cock, no. He's singing all the time. This cock is mistaken. You know. He should sing in the morning, not. He should not sing at 5 p.m. You know. This poor one is completely confused, very stressed chicken, you know. Well, this is, again, you know, you heard me. Well, Kukutika also is a chicken.
Yeah,
chicken. That's why he's that's why he starts singing, you know. He hears about chicken, so he starts singing. That's good. Good.
In the morning.
But Kukutika Rama, in, it's a very famous Arama in Patna. You know the difference between Arama and Vihara, don't you? Arama and Vihara, practically the same thing, yes? But why two words? If you have two words, that means there is a difference. Because if it's absolutely the same, the one of the two words will disappear. That it works like that in language. So Arama actually is a. Oh, you want to kill it?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Sister. Yes. No, it will not help it to better existence.
Yeah. Serious.
So this. I forget what I'm just saying, you know. this chicken is confusing me. Well, Kukutika Arama is Arama. Arama is a gift by some lay person, by some Dhanapati. Then this is called Arama, where the monks can enjoy Aram, this gift. That's why it's called Arama. Vihara just means dwelling, a place to dwell. Vihara is where monks can dwell. And in Bihar, there were many Viharas. That's why Bihar is Vihara and Bihar, same words, I told you. Bihar, the province. No Indians here, no?
Yeah,
half. Are you Indian?
Half Indian.
Half Indian.
Half Indian.
Half Indian.
Half Indian. Indian mother, Bangladesh mother.
half Indian. Okay, the better half. Well, it's good. International. So anyway, this Vihara just means a place to dwell. That's where it was, where the monks can dwell.
Yeah.
And also, it's interesting to know when the monks travel. Originally, the monks do not stay in one place. In the very early Buddhism, the monks always were roaming, traveling around. They did not stay in one place, in one temple. Only 3 months during the rainy season. But for the rest of the year, they always travel. Also the Buddha. The Buddha did not stay in one place 1 year. He did not do that. Just 3 months. And all the early Sangha also did that. They were traveling around. Only when they started staying longer than 3 months in one place, then really monasteries began. Now when you stay the whole year instead of 3 months, well, you have a temple. And well, this early situation of the Sangha is important for the Vinaya, by the way, because when the monk travels, always goes around. That's the rules must be a little bit different from the rules of a monastery where the monks stay all year. When the monks stay all year in one place, you have to have more rules of hygiene and so forth. When you travel around, different rules apply. It's so the early Vinaya, we still do not know very much about it, really. Theravada Vinaya is for monks. But in the early Sangha, monks did not stay in one place. Monks were traveling. So maybe, what was the early Vinaya? What did Upali say? We don't know. Only many traditions after that, later. So this Arama in Patna, in Pataliputra, called Kukutarama, it also had the name of Ashokarama. But the monks living there were Mahasanghikas. They belonged to the Mahasanghi. So after the split, there were the Mahasanghikas there. In the time of Ashoka, you already had Mahasanghikas and Staviras. In his Sangiti, only Staviras took place. But Mahasanghikas were already there. In the Ashokarama, you had Mahasanghikas. And this name was also called Kukutarama. And then, of course, monks started discussing. Indians like to discuss. They discussed, and there was some split. And one group called themselves Bahushrutiya. And I don't know what happened to the original Kukutikas or Gokulikas. Maybe the original ones changed name to Bahushrutiya, could well be. You know, because if you have one original name and then later two names, one should always think which of these two are the original ones. It is not that you have three, maybe you just have two. And maybe the Kukutikas became Bahushrutiyas, I don't know, it's possible. And they also traveled all over India, from the north to the south. And the name is very Staviriya. It makes you think of Stavira Buddhism, not Mahasanghika. So they had Stavira influence, Theravada, Staviravada influence, those people. But we have very little information about them. So little. We cannot say much about it. Whenever I mentioned them, there are always two names which come up. One is Ashwagosha. And the other is Harivarma. They are always brought in connection with Bahushrutiyas. Harivarman. Ashwagosha, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, Lalita. Well, maybe. Buddhacharita.
Buddhacharita.
Yes, this is true. Buddhacharita. This is Now they say there are three Sanskrit texts which are sure to be by Ashva Ghosha. Buddha Charita is in Sanskrit only half, only 14 chapters. Complete text is 28. And then you have the complete text in Chinese and Tibetan. There is Saundarananda. Saundarananda is also by Ashva Ghosha. It's about the conversion. Ashva Ghosha was fascinated by conversion. How a Brahmin becomes a Buddhist. The Buddha Charita is of course the life of the Buddha, but most of it is about conversion. People convert to Buddhism. And even in the last chapter, chapter 28, Ashva Ghosha says so himself, that he writes this because of conversion. He wants to explain the life of the Buddha to convert. So his conversion is his obsession. So that's number two, Saundarananda. It's also, and Shariputra Prakarana, that's the third one. Shariputra Prakarana, oh, a small piece. They know Shariputra Prakarana is a play, to play on stage, theater. It's a theater play. And Ashva Ghosha is an author of theater, actually. If you read his Buddha Charita, it also looks like a play. Yeah. The dialogue is more important. People do not do much, but they speak pretty much. You know, it's just like in theater. Actors talking to each other and saying things and thinking and then talking aloud about what their thoughts are and things like that. So I think even Buddha Charita was meant to be a play in the theater. It looks very much like a play. Saundarananda, I have not looked too carefully at it, but Buddha Charita, I have looked very carefully at it. And it looks like a play. Shariputra Prakarana is a play, you know that. So he's a Brahmin. He was a Brahmin who changed to Buddhism. Like so many, you know. So many Brahmins became Buddhist. He lived probably 100 AD or a little bit earlier. This is most likely. Because in a text which can be dated about 150 AD, he is mentioned as someone of the past. So I think at least 50 years before that, before you mention the past, you know. So it's probably 100 AD, maybe a little bit earlier. It's quite early, which is quite before Kanishka. Yes? Maybe he didn't know Kanishka. Buddhist history says he knew Kanishka. He was one of the teachers and the good friends, Kalyana Mitras of Kanishka. They say so. Yeah. But maybe he didn't know him. Maybe Kanishka. You know, if you are a disciple, Kanishka could say, I'm a disciple of Ashva Ghosha, but never have met Ashva Ghosha. It's possible. Just like Kumarajiva said, I'm a disciple of Nagarjuna, never met him.
How can they meet?
But you can be a mental follower. And so I guess Kanishka can be influenced by Ashva Ghosha. That's how it happened, most likely. Ashva Ghosha used Sanskrit. As you know, during the Sangiti, during Kanishka, they used Sanskrit. So there is already an influence from Ashva Ghosha. The use of Sanskrit in Kashmir could be the result of influence by Ashva Ghosha. Could be. He was not the only one, no. He had three good friends. Do you know? Charaka was another one. Charaka, a good doctor. He had three good friends, I forget. What's the third one? Forget the third one. He had three good friends, Kanishka. But Kanishka was not a Buddhist. But he was very tolerant. He was open to Buddhism, but he was not a believer of Buddhism. He's a So the religious history which makes Kanishka a second Ashoka is religious history. As I said, religious history is not always the same as real history. Religious history, like the biography of someone, you know, if you read the biographies of monks in Chinese, those people are very holy and they did supernatural things. Bodhidharma was 150 years old when he arrived in China. I don't believe it. He probably looked very bad when he arrived there. So he said, I'm 150 years old. When I don't feel well, I also say I'm 100. So Bodhidharma said 150. And then he stayed in China for 50 years. That makes it 200.
Yeah.
I don't think it's possible. It's not possible. But this is in his official biography, 150 years. So the biographies are sacred biographies, not the reality. For reality, we have to look at other information, at historical texts and other information. So this three good friends, Kalyana Mitra of Kanishka, it's sacred history. But of course, even if it is sacred history, there has to be some connection. There has to be some reason. And the reason to link Ashvaghosha with Kanishka, I think it's the Sanskrit. The use of Sanskrit in Kashmir. Of course you can compare Kanishka with Ashoka. Kanishka was also a very strong warrior. He beat everybody. He made a big empire. Killed lots of people. And after that he said, oh, sorry. and then he became a good Buddhist.
You know?
So, just like Ashoka, after Kala Ashoka, he became Dharma Ashoka.
Yeah. You know?
So Kanishka had the same development. He built a great empire, then was converted to Buddhism. And Kanishka is also like that. He made a very big empire. But after him it became smaller. Ashvaghosha. They say Ashvaghosha is a Bhaush, is a Sarvastivada who is influenced by Bhaushrutiya ideas. Based on his work, people have been looking at the ideas, which doctrinal ideas you can find in there, and they all say it's Sarvastivada. Not Vaibhashika, we now know. In 100 AD, or the end of the first century AD, there were no Vaibhashikas. Kanishka was not born yet. So there was no Sangiti in Kashmir. No, this is before that. And before that, you had already Sarvastivadins. During Kanishka's time, we would call them Sautrantika. Yes? We would, no Buddha Bhashta Abhidharma. But anyway, they are Sarvastivada. You can call Ashvaghosha Sarvastivada. Maybe today we can call him Sautrantika. But at the time, the word did not exist. And he was influenced. We also see some Mahasangika ideas in his work. And people say maybe Bahushrutiya. Because Sarvastivada is Stavira. Stavira, Vada, Sarvastivadas are Staviras. And Bahushrutiyas are the Mahasangikas who also have Stavira links. So it's quite possible that he had some Bahushrutiya ideas too. So when we say Bahushrutiya, we usually also mention Ashvaghosha. Also mention Harivarma. The Indians do. Maybe, have you ever heard about Harivarman? Harivarman in one word, yeah? It's not Harry.
Not Harry.
Harry, Harry comes from England, but Harry Varman is he's only known in Chinese actually. His work only exists in Chinese translations. Probably lived around 300 AD, maybe a bit earlier. At the latest, 300 AD, in North India, in Ayodhya, he is from there. He was also a Brahmin, and of course, converted to Buddhism. You know, it makes you wonder if there are any Brahmins left, you know, they all convert to Buddhism. This is, anyway, he was also, in his biography, which in Chinese, in his biography, it is mentioned, he was converted to Buddhism, the kind of Buddhism you find in the Buddhism of Kumaralata. You heard about Kumaralata? For a very long time, we did not really know his name, we only had Chinese. But some 50 years ago, a German expedition in Turfan in Central Asia found a text of stories, Kalpana Manditika, or Drishtanta Pankti. Have you heard about that text? No. No, you just did, right? You just heard about it. I just told you about it. I mentioned it because it has to do with this one, you know. I found a text called Kalpana Manditika. It has another title also called Drishtanta Pankti. Drishtanta Pankti means a collection of drishtantas. Drishtanta Pankti is a collection of drishtantas. Drishtanta?
Example.
Drishtanta Pankti. Yes, but Drishtanta is also a story. Drishtanta Pankti is a collection of stories. And it's also called Kalpana Manditika. And in the Chinese there is one sutra. And they usually call it Mahayana Sutra Alankara. Heard about it? Usually call it Mahayana. And then Sutra Alankara. The Mahayana Sutra Alankara. Sutra Alankara, it exists in Chinese. So we already know this text for a very long time. And the Chinese says this is the work of Ashvaghosha. So, and it was translated by Kumarajiva before he arrived in China. So he already translated this text very early. But then a new manuscript was found in Central Asia, and then we know that the text which we always knew as Mahayana Sutra Alankara by Ashvaghosha actually really was a text called Kalpana Manditika by Kumaralata. We have the Sanskrit. So we have the proof, Sanskrit. Then the next question is, why this mistake? Why this confusion? Well, if this is Ashvaghosha, I told you Bahushrutiya is Mahasangika, is Mahayana, yes? Mahasangikas call themselves Mahayana. So if you have some Mahasangika influence, Bahushrutiya influence, it looks Mahayana. This would explain the word in the Chinese title. Sutra Alankara. Alankara and Manditika, more or less same meaning. Manditika is also adornment, It's also embellishment.
Ornament?
Ornament, yes. Also manditika is to make beautiful. So manditika and alankara have the same meaning, Indian words. And then you have kalpana and sutra. Kalpana can be a text. So you see, kalpana manditika is actually the better word for sutra alankara. And it is called Mahayana because Ashvaghosha had Mahasanghika influence. And it is mentioned in Chinese to be by Ashvaghosha, because Ashvaghosha wrote stories and Ashvaghosha had this Mahayana influence, but it is not by Ashvaghosha. It is by Kumaralata. Now, who is Kumaralata? Do you have any idea about this? Who is Kumaralata? Kumaralata, they say, is the Mulacharya of Sautrantikas. So we are back with the Sautrantikas, yes? Is the Mulacharya of Sautrantikas. So the first teacher of Sautrantikas. So the tradition says Sautrantika begins with him. So he must have lived about 150 or 55 or 60 AD. Because before that, the word Sautrantika did not exist. Everybody was Sarvastivada. You only have Sautrantikas if you have Vaibhashikas. If you don't have Vaibhashikas, you don't have Sautrantikas. The split during Kanishka was Vaibhashikas with the Buddha Bhashita Abhidharma, 7 texts spoken by the Buddha, and new Sanskrit Gyan Prasthana and a new Vibhasha called Mahavibhasha. So those people are Vaibhashikas. But before that happened, everybody was Sarvastivada. Everybody was Sautrantika. You did not need a word like Sautrantika because there were no Vaibhashikas. So before that, everybody was Sautrantika, but the word did not exist. The word Sautrantika only makes meaning, is meaningful, if you have non-Sautrantikas. If you have non-Sautrantikas, namely Vaibhashikas, at that moment the word Sautrantika makes sense, which is during Kanishka Sangiti. So this Kumaralata may be very early during Kanishka's reign in Gandhara, and he wrote a text Kalpana Manditika, but it is also called the Shtanta Pankti. Remember what I said yesterday about the Shtanta, Dashtantikas, yes? So they have they use the Shtantas, comparisons, similes, comparing past and present. They use many stories in the Vinaya. In the Vinayas. So this is a collection of stories. And he is supposed to have written that. So the first Dashtantika, let's say, the first Sautrantika, the first non-Vaibhashika Sarvastivada, it's all the same, was Kumaralata. Kumaralata was a Sarvastivadin, but he did not believe in the Kashmir ideas. He's a non-Kashmiri kind of person. He's a traditional one. Also notice that this collection of stories is only stories, only Buddhist stories. The Buddhist Avadana literature, stories in Buddhist literature, begin with people like him. This is the oldest collection of Buddhist stories as independent stories. Before him, the stories were all in Vinaya. The Vinaya is full of stories. So you also in sutras you have some stories. So there were stories, of course, but with him he takes the stories out of the Vinaya, maybe also out of the sutras, I don't know, anyway, out of the Vinaya, and makes a collection of stories, independent story collection. This begins with him. Begins in the, let's say, middle of the 2nd century AD. Middle of the 2nd century AD, you have independent stories, story collections. Kumaralata was the first to do it. After him came many more. You have Divyavadana, you have Avadana Shataka. You have so many collections of stories. They all come after him. And they are all non-vaibhashikas. They are all Dashtantika, Sautrantika kind of story collections. So Divyavadana is a collection of stories belonging to the non-vaibhashikas, to the Sautrantikas. Avadana Shataka 100 is also a collection of story belonging to the Sautrantika, Dashtantikas. Even Ashoka Avadana is an independent story. It all belongs to his kind of Buddhism, to Sarvastivada, to non-vaibhashika Sarvastivada Buddhism. Is it clear what I'm saying? It's not very difficult, actually. But this, of course, this is not Abhidharma, but you cannot separate Abhidharma from the rest of Buddhism. You cannot do that. Abhidharma is one part of Buddhism. You cannot cut it loose from the rest of all the literature. It's not possible. So this is a non-vaibhashika kind of literature. So we say independent Avadana literature begins in the middle of the 2nd century with the Ashtantikas, when they make collections. This is no coincidence, you know. At that time they were removing most of the stories from the Vinaya. So when you remove the stories from the Vinaya, you use the stories and you make a collection of stories. That's a normal thing to do. It's very reasonable. After him there are, so because he is the first one, after him there are many people who wrote story collections. You heard about Sri Lata. Sri Lata is a disciple of Kumaralata.
It seems like a female name, right? Lata.
Lata, not Lata, Lata. Some, before we had this Sanskrit name, there were more than one Sanskritizations. We have only had Chinese. Kubara Labdha is also mentioned, but this is wrong. Since we have the Sanskrit, we know it's Kumara Lata. And so after him, there are others. Sri Lata, he's supposed to be a disciple. And Sri Lata is an Abhidharmika. Sangabhadra, absolute, and the Mahavibhasha do not agree with the ideas of Sri Lata. Sri Lata, when did Sri Lata live? We don't know. Some people say he was a disciple of Kumaralata, so just after him. But as I just said, you can't be a disciple 100 years later. You can be a disciple 200 years later. I think you can be a disciple of Kumarajiva.
Yeah.
If you get take his ideas, but he's dead for 1,600 years now. You know? But you can still be his disciple. You can be a disciple in the second, in the third generation. Quite often happens like that. I remember very early when I was in Japan and I met some Japanese master, and he said, "Oh, there is this Italian lady here, and she is a disciple of a disciple of Tucci. Tucci is a Tibetologist. Tibetan studies, Tucci is very famous. Giuseppe Tucci, Italian, very famous. So, and this Italian lady was a disciple of Tucci." Okay, so you don't have to be, she never met Tucci, you know. But because Tucci is so famous, she probably said, "I'm a disciple of Tucci," so she would look good herself. I don't know. It's sometimes students are very stupid.
Yeah.
It's of course, a student cannot say teacher is stupid, and a teacher cannot say student is stupid. But in reality, it's sometimes like that. Yeah. Sometimes this is works both ways. You know, it's if a teacher who is no good, he can teach you what not to do. You know, that's also teaching. It can teach you just how you should not work. And then this is also scholarship. If you make a mistake, good, other people know this is a mistake and they can do what is right. They can avoid the same mistake. So even making mistakes and doing something, it is also very instructive for everybody. So whatever. Well, Kumara Lata, Sri Lata, so we don't know exactly when he lived. Some people say he lived in the time of Ashvaghosha, of Vasubandhu. Some people say that. So anyway, we do not have much information. Kumara Lata, okay, he wrote this, yes, and it was attributed to Ashvaghosha. Ashvaghosha was also a Brahmin who was converted to non-Vaibhashika Sarvastivada Buddhism. And he had some influence from the Bahushrutiyas, so you could sometimes call it Mahayana. Okay, this is Harivarman. He is really an Abhidharma person. Harivarman was also converted to Buddhism, the kind of Buddhism of Kumara Lata. It is mentioned in his biography. So his biography says Harivarman, in his youth, in Pataliputra, he met a teacher in the tradition of Kumara Lata and he converted him to Sarvastivada Buddhism. So Harivarman originally was a non-Vaibhashika Sarvastivada. It's mentioned in his biography. It also says later he met another teacher, a Mahasanghika one, who taught him about emptiness. And Harivarman thought, well, makes sense. So he is a Sarvastivadin originally, who changed his mind to Mahasanghika emptiness. So it's a very mixed Buddhism text, you know. So some people say he is a Sarvastivadin. Yes, if you focus on his conversion and on his biography, it says so. But some people say he's Mahasanghika, he's Mahayana. It's true too, you know. It's also true because he changed his mind to Mahasanghika emptiness later. How do we know all that? Because he wrote a work. He wrote a long Abhidharma text. Well, he wrote a very long Abhidharma text. And the Sanskrit title of this Abhidharma text, we only recently know this. When you check it, Wikipedia is bad, you know. I just checked it this afternoon to see what they say about Sarvastivada, all kinds of wrong things, you know. It will not make you any wiser.
Anyone can write it.
Anything is possible. Maybe I should write something on the web.
Yeah, he's corrupted.
Yeah, but that's one possibility.
Yeah.
But I can also teach by saying more wrong things. Then people will say, oh, this is wrong, and we'll try to correct it. You know, this is also instruction. if you have the chaos, you can add to the chaos.
Yeah.
And then insight will be the result. Or you can say, this is chaos, this is wrong. And then you have discussion starts. You know?
More chaos.
So there are two ways of approaching this situation. Yeah. Anyway, Harivarman wrote it. Usually they call this text Satyasiddhi. And I usually call it Satyasiddhi Shastra, based on the Chinese. They say his text is based on the Four Noble Truths. It's the plan of the Four Noble Truths. of course, you know, we just mentioned the first one, the one of suffering. So the Four Noble Truths. But you have, you also have Nirodha, you know. Sooner or later, you can get rid of all the suffering, you know, and all the joy at the same time. Maybe keep the suffering, so you can also have the fun. if you get do away with the suffering, no fun anymore. No,
yeah.
It's well, whatever. I'm not going to give a Dharma talk in this place. This is Satya City. Satya is the Four Noble Truths. Yes. So as I already said so a long time ago, I said the Staviras base their explanations on the Four Noble Truths. The Mahasanghikas take the six paramitas, and the Staviras take the Four Noble Truths. So this is based on the Four Noble Truths. Of course, Harivarman was a Kumaralata kind of Sarvastivadin, so it would make sense that his work is still based on the Four Noble Truths. Yes? And he was a Sarvastivada convert, so he could well have a Shastra, yes? But some other scholars said probably should be Tapha. The Siddhi Shastra, everything. So some say it's not Satya, but Tapha. Because this scholar said maybe this is not about the Four Noble Truths. The plan is the Four Noble Truths. But the message, the meaning, is about reality, is about tattva. See, the contents are about tattva. So they say it should not be Satya Siddhi, but Tattva Siddhi. Because of the meaning, the message of the text. Yes, and then there was a scholar. That's nice, right? It looks like a story. Once there was a scholar who was looking on the web, and he found a Chinese text conserved, kept in Japan, and he found a phonetic rendering of the text of the title of Harivarman. You mean in Chinese sounds? He found Chinese sounds mentioned in a text. In a Chinese text kept in Japan, so people that had not noticed, but he found the Chinese sounds of the title, of the Sanskrit title of this work. Because it was Sanskrit, you know, around 300 AD, when Harivarman lived, Sanskrit was the language, not Prakrit anymore. So they found it. Now, if you find the Chinese sounds corresponding to the Sanskrit word, next problem is, what is it, you know? Because with the Chinese sounds, you have many possibilities. It's never very accurate. But someone reconstructed the Sanskrit sound and came to the conclusion that it must be Prodbhuta and Upadesha. So Prodbhutopadesha. It is not Shastra at all. Upadesha, no problem. It's in Chinese, it's called Upotisha, which is Upadesha, which is not Shastra. Anybody can hear that. So it must be Upadesha, which makes sense. As I said, Harivarman met this Mahasanghika teacher, and Mahasanghikas have Upadeshas. So he called his own text Upadesha, because that's what he believed in. And Prodbhuta means realization, making true the truth. The truth, there was some part before that about... The truth about the body of knowledge. So, but it's... In Chinese, you only have Prodbhutopadesha. It is this body of knowledge, which is the Ashtagrantha Ashtagrantha and Abhidharma texts, as explained by traditional Kantar and Sarvasti Vadins, he believed that originally, but then he changed his mind. So the this body of knowledge is a Sarvastivada body of knowledge, but realized the truth about this body of knowledge, you know, the realization how it really is, namely emptiness. So he's originally a Sarvastivada person, changing his mind to Mahasangika emptiness. So is what he believed at first is this. Then he changed his mind and he writes a text saying the truth about this. So he explains Sarvastivada ideas influenced by Mahasangikas. This is what happens. So you see, Prodbhuta Upadesha is quite different from the first two. Yes? It's quite different. This is based on Chinese sounds for the original Sanskrit title. This is only based on the meaning of the Chinese characters, and nothing more than that. So now we know it should be Prodbhuta Upadesha. His emptiness is not Nagarjuna's emptiness, by the way. It's a Mahasangika emptiness. Madhyamika Shunyata. He has a different kind of emptiness. He says when you have one unit, you divide in two.
Two.
You have two half. This one half, you split up. Still have two half, smaller one. You keep dividing.
Makes more.
Until at the end, you have emptiness. This is his kind of emptiness. His emptiness is always splitting up elements until you have nothing anymore. That's his kind of explanation of emptiness. So it is not Madhyamika. Madhyamika emptiness is emptiness because there is nothing existing by itself. Everything depends on causes and conditions. So something independent, that's not possible. You always have causes and conditions and you always have results. So there's nothing existing all by itself. This is the kind of emptiness used by Nagarjuna. And so all dharmas are like that. So when all dharmas are like that, they really do not exist by themselves. So how can you know them? You can know Pratitya Samutpada, but the emptiness, nothing exists all by itself. So this is the kind of Madhyamika. The school is called Madhyamaka. And if you say Madhyamika ideas, Madhyamika people, it's an adjective, you know. Madhyamaka is the school. But the adjective is Madhyamika. Even though some also use the word Madhyamika for the school. Well, it should be Madhyamaka, yes. So Harivarman was an Abhidharmika. He lived 300 AD, maybe a bit earlier, in Ayodhya. He was a Brahmin. He also was a Brahmin in Ayodhya. Just like Ashvaghosha, they lived about the same area. And both of them are Brahmins. The ideas of Harivarman and of Ashvaghosha, very often quite similar. So the Abhidharma of Harivarman, you have the title here. This is a new, if you check online, and you'll probably find one of these two. But now you know this is not true. It is not Shastra at all, Padesha. When you have the Chinese sounds, the next problem is, what Sanskrit was it? Why? What kind of Sanskrit is it? Chinese is not very good to render Indian sounds, to render any sounds. I can give you examples where you would not guess the origin, or origin actually. If I say Luxembourg, who would guess this is Luxembourg?
Yeah.
No. If I say Israel, yeah, who would guess this is Israel? You know, it's
very difficult.
If I say Wukolan, how would you guess Ukraine? Things like that. Yes, it's not possible. If you don't know, you have to know this. But even though this is supposed to be the sound, you know. Yeah, it's very difficult. The first difficulty, to give you another one, is, you know, you know this fellow. You know Anshigal?
Anshigal, yeah.
He's the first great translator of Buddhist texts in China.
Yeah.
In second century AD. Anshigal, many people have been looking, what is it, what does it mean? Actually, there is a word called Ashkami.
Ashkami,
that's how the Persian, our Iranians.
Yeah.
Iranians, they say Iran.
Iran, yeah.
Iran, they say. And a Persian means Ashkanian. Ashkani. Ashkani is a Persian. A Persian. What kind of person are you? Ashkani, you would say Ashkani. Ashkani is an Anshigal. It's the sound, you know. When Anshigal arrived in China, he had probably the normal questions: where do you come from? Who are you? What's your name? And things like that. And he probably was not joking. He was giving a real answer. And so he said, Ashkani. Ashkani, Chinese said Anshigal. You know, it looks like a real Chinese name with a family name, a surname, and a given name, you know?
Yeah.
His first name. His family name was An, and his given name Shigal. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. Shigal. Shigal is the pronunciation. Shigal. So this whole Ashkani word inspired the term Anshigal. It is just a phonetic thing. But you have to know this. If you know this, you can recognize it. If you don't, so the Chinese sounds are sometimes, very often, quite difficult to reconstruct. It's very often quite strange. So the one who found this was very familiar with mantras. You know mantra? What is a mantra? Please tell me one mantra.
Legends. Tantra.
Well, tantra is a text, yes?
Mantra like sutra.
No, mantra is not a text. Tantra is a text. You know, sutra is the thread of a...
Mantra is some spells of the...
No, the thread, the thread. This is the sutra. Mm.
Yeah.
This gives us the guideline, ideological guideline of Buddhism, the thread which runs through all Buddhism. Yeah. This is sutra, and tantra is this. So you need both to have one tissue, to have one fabric. Yes. So Tantra is this, sutra is that, and you need, so tantra is actually the practical addition, the practical supplement to the ideological outlines you find in the sutra. In the sutra you find the theory, the tantra gives you some practice. So mantra is quite different. Mantra, you do not find mantra in Abhidharma. You do not find dharani in Abhidharma. But do you know the meaning of the word mantra and dharani? I think you should, because we're all Buddhists here. You should know what mantra means and what even what dharani means.
Dharani is word.
Dharani is?
Word.
Plus. No. Dharani is hodo.
Holding something.
Summarizing something.
We can say summarizing. Well, I will not go into details. I will just briefly say what it is. because it's, we have to talk about the Dharma, but mantra and harmony. Mantra is a magic formula. The Chinese and the Japanese call it true words. True words, Zhen Yan, Xingong in Japan, right? True words. Xingong in Japan, Zhen Yan, but it's actually, Xingong is a Japanese word, and the Chinese used back from the Japanese. The Japanese get, usually Japanese get it from China, but at some, especially this kind of Buddhism, was almost completely lost in China, so the Chinese learned it again from Japan.
Yeah.
So that's why it's it comes from Japan, this true word. But mantra means it's a magic formula, like Om. Om is a mantra. Om Hum Pak. You do not look for meaning. In mantras, the sound is important. You don't look for meaning. Of course, we always look for meaning. Yes.
Yeah.
So we want to know what it means. But if I say "Illy Milly Poo Poo," if I say that, when I see a snake coming in,
yeah,
I will say "Illy Milly Poo Poo," and you will see the snake will run away.
Yeah.
Even though it does not have legs, it will run away. Yeah. So you have all kinds of magic words. Also in to cure illness, also the old way of curing illness is with a mantra and with herbal medicine, drinking herbal things, but also mantra. Also the two most common illnesses were eye disease and snake bite. So to cure eye disease, you have some magic formula. And you also have some herb which you can put on the eye. For snake bite, you also say some mantra, and you also apply some herbal thing. Those were the two most common problems. So mantra is a magic formula, which you do not look for meaning, it's just
Does it function?
I don't think so. Dharani, yeah. The meaning of dharani means actually you hold it in your mind.
Hold it.
Dharayati in Sanskrit, it makes you grasp, makes you hold. Dharayati, dharani, dharayati, it makes you hold, yes? Makes you grasp. Dhar means to hold. And the causative form is dharayati, yes? The causative form, so it makes you hold in your mind. It keeps it in your mind. A dharani is a long, if you have a long text, which is difficult to remember, if you remember a small piece of it, and then the whole text comes back to you, all right? Because they did not have library in the old days, you know? When there was a monk in Bactria in Afghanistan, he was walking around from one stupa to the other, he did not have a library on his back. It was not very practical. So he knew everything by heart. So he was human, so he could forget. And this is a trick to easily remember long texts. You remember a few passages. You remember a few pieces of the text. And if you remember that, it makes you remember the whole thing. That's the basic meaning of dharani. You use a dharani, this is some text, this has meaning. And when you remember the dharani, it makes you remember the whole text. Yes? This is how it started. This is how the old teachers were teaching, not with a library, but with dharanis. You know? With how they remembered, if they wanted to recite the Dirghagama, Diga Nikaya, they could not maybe immediately say the whole thing. They remembered a few places here and there, and if they remember that, it makes them remember everything. So this is the original meaning of dharani. But later, it also came to have the same meaning as mantra. Like all money from the home is the mantra. Yes? But now people call it also call it dharani. It's a magic formula. Do you know what it means, Om Mani Padme Hum?
Yes.
What does it mean?
The lotus.
Yeah. Do you know what it means?
Om, it's the I language.
Om has no special meaning. Om just
I
puts you in the right mood.
It's
you know?
Homage.
If you have Om, then this the sound makes you okay, peaceful. But then, Mani Padme. And the hum also, hum just is the last sound, you know. Hum, the alphabet starts with A and ends with H. Hum, hum is the last sound in Indian language, from A to H, yes? So, the hum is the last in the whole alphabet, let's say. So it really comes down to Mani Padme.
No.
There, you have the common explanation. Mani is a jewel. Mani is jewel and Padme in the lotus. Locative of lotus, in the lotus. That's what they usually say. There is a second explanation. Mani Padme is Avalokiteshvara. Mani Padma is a name for Avalokiteshvara. So the vocative case of Mani Padma is Mani Padme. So Mani Padme can just be Avalokiteshvara. This is also possible. So you have two explanations. The lotus, the jewel in the lotus, or Om Avalokiteshvara. Om. No? That's also possible. Avalokiteshvara is quite important in this kind of Buddhism. Avalokiteshvara. Well, whatever. So we have said much more than Abhidhamma already.
Yeah.
It all started from him, from Prabhupada Padesha, all that. Maybe we should have some pause now. Yes. Yes. Maybe we have a pause now.
We have a pause.
Yes.
Please swing water.
Yes, I will.
So, the lotus.